A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Que quiere marcharse de Semedo. Semedo de momento está enchufado. Ahora justo lo digo y justo se pierde. Ay, a punto ha estado de cometer penalti. Gol de Nicola Pepe.
Is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnar Blog. James, goodly morning to you.
It is a goodly morning. A very goodly morning. And congratulations, Andrew. 20 years of Arse Blog yesterday.
Thank you very much.
Incredible.
Where has the time gone? It is absolutely crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for your very nice words on your video. You're much delayed post Wolves video.
Yes, it's barely. I mean, I had to talk about something else, right? Because I couldn't just talk about Wolves. It was too late. But did you have a nice day? Did you celebrate yourself?
I did. I have to say thank you to everybody for all the messages, emails, Twitter mentions, Facebooks, posts, things, all of them. They're just so numerous, I can't even begin to get around to replying to them all individually. So I just want to say thank you very much to everybody. I got quite emotional, actually, because everyone was just so nice. Which is, you know, I'm not that I have low expectations of people, but you know what it's like. You kind of forget sometimes just how many people are out there and how many people listen and read and have just been part of this thing for 20 years, and it's amazing. So thank you so much to everyone. And yes, I went, had a bit of a celebration, went for some Mexican food, had some frozen margaritas, and came home and had another couple of drinks. And I'm feeling a little bit today, just a little bit. I was out taking Lana for a walk, listening to Mark Maron's podcast. And it was very, very soothing because he's got Sam Elliott on. You know the actor, Elliott, from Big Lebowski, who does the... And his voice is just unbelievable. I'm sort of walking along with a bit of a hangover, and he's there sort of like, I've always had the mustache my whole life. I've had a lot. Apologies for my terrible accent, but that kind of deep rumble is quite soothing when you've got a bit of a hangover. So I recommend it to anyone else who is suffering a bit today. You can get some Mark Maron and Sam Elliott in your ears after you're finished with this, of course.
He could play Stan, couldn't he, in the Cronky biopic, Sam Elliott.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's a good shout, isn't it?
Yeah. He's got the moustache for it, certainly.
He definitely does. He definitely does.
But yeah, a very sonorous voice. Well, congratulations. I'm glad you had a good day, richly deserved, and I'm sure all the listeners will join me in saying thank you for an amazing 20 years.
Yeah, well, it's...
Here's to the next 20.
Here's to the next 20, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and hopefully people are enjoying the podcasts as well, which I recorded over the last little while. But what I did was, after I got them all recorded and edited and what have you, I sort of did the little intro and outro to each one.
Right.
All in basically a day and a half. And by the time I got to about the 10th, I was running out of ways just to say goodbye. It just sounded weird in my head. Like every time,
Andrew, take a tip from me. Yeah. Just keep it consistent.
Bye bye.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's why I don't deviate. You know, when you've got something that works, stick to it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when you repeat a word over and over again, and the word loses all sense and meaning. It was like that, but with a goodbye part of a podcast. I was like, does that make sense? I've said that before. I feel like I'm repeating myself here, which I was, of course. But there you go. How was your weekend?
Yeah, I have listened to a couple. Do you know what? I've not gone for chronology. I've gone like years that I was particularly interested in first, but I will consume them all eventually. 20 hours though, so it's a lot of listening.
Well, it's not quite 20 hours. Not quite 20 hours, because I kept them to about half an hour, most of them anyway. Some are a little bit longer. But there's a good chunk of audio for people to get through in a week when there isn't any Arsenal. So a little bit of public service there. How was your weekend and your stage show and everything else? It all went well?
It was great. I mean, as you know, if you listen to the Arscast on Friday, I had the brilliant incident on Thursday night with the guy coming up to tell me the score. In fact, I think I had a message today from one of that group, one of that party. I forget who it was now. Let's have a look. Oh, here you go, Ben Turner. Hi, James. I was at your show on Thursday. It was actually my cousin who got a bit too excited at full time and let you know the result during the show. He was suitably mortified, embarrassed by the time the show ended, which makes the whole thing even better. But it got us thinking on the way home, if there is any other news or event, it would be acceptable for someone to interrupt a live show with. Definitely a night we and I'm sure you will never forget. I mean, listen, it was if you're going to interrupt the show with news, make it good news.
Well, yeah, and, you don't want to hear about a 95th minute goal for Wolves, for example.
No, that would have been really disastrous, especially in the midst of a comedy show. It really could have taken a turn. Why is he suddenly breaking down in tears at the microphone? Very odd. They must have thought there'd been like a bereavement or something. It was a lovely weekend. Lots of Arsenal fans came in. Oh, that lady Karen came.
Yeah, I saw your tweet. Yeah. You spoke about her at the end of the podcast a couple of months back.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was December, I think.
Right.
She's a big Arsenal fan and listener to the podcast. And her family had got in touch and said, oh, you know, it'd be lovely if you could give her a mention or something like that, because she had cared for my grandfather in his final days in hospital, in Watford General Hospital, on the ward he was on, which was called Bluebell Ward. And so, you know, I was obviously so touched to hear about that. She listens to the show all the time, and just one of those weird small world coincidences. She had recognised me coming into the hospital and never said anything, but realised it was me. And yeah, one of those odd, you know, small world moments. And then the other night, Saturday night, was it maybe? I came out of the show and she was there waiting in the bar. Wow. And I got to meet her in real life and her family and thank them and, yeah, sign a book for them and all those kinds of things. And just so nice. I honestly, to be able to express your gratitude in person was a really fortuitous thing. And it was a really touching moment.
Yeah, well, that's lovely. That is lovely.
Yeah, it was nice. And so I had a really lovely week. And thank you. I'm so lucky. Like, obviously, the show has a kind of organic audience of its own, but it's definitely boosted up by an Arsenal fan contingent. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. So let me ask you this.
Go on.
I didn't see the Carabao Cup final.
Okay.
Yesterday, because I was otherwise engaged with nice food and drinks and everything else, and there was no TV in the place. But I caught the penalty shootout this morning when I got up. I had a look at that and enjoyed that a lot. At what point did you do the tweet? At what point did you do that tweet? Like, how long before the penalty shootout was that? Because I have no concept of the time.
It wasn't long before. I tweeted saying, it'd be funny if Kepa came on. Imagine if Kepa comes on, doesn't save a single penalty and
misses the
crucial kick. Yeah. But that was, the shootout was already underway at that point. He was already on the field. But I mean, you know, I'm still being hailed as a kind of Nostradamus, and I'll take it. I will absolutely take it. But it was very, very, very funny, I think.
Yes.
I mean, on the Discord, Simon Party King message saying, spare a thought for Kepa, that thought being, ha, 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 you daft prick.
I mean, there was one penalty. I can't remember which one it was, but he did the thing, you know, that goalkeepers do, like he stands on one side to make one side of the goal bigger. And you think you're going to try and tempt the penalty taker to put it in the side of the goal where there is more to aim at, right? Mm. And there was one of them where he stood there doing that, and whoever it was just fucking leathered the ball past him on the
Van Dijk.
On the, was it the Van Dijk one where he was he was actually standing with? I mean, I've never seen a keeper manage to get out of the way of 11 penalties as well as him.
That was extraordinary, that moment. I think that is, to be honest, probably where Liverpool won the shootout. It was a pretty ballsy move. Kepa stood very clearly on one side of the goal, and Van Dijk just didn't play into it at all. Just smashed the ball past him on that side.
Picked his spot. Corner. Yeah.
And it made Kepa look pretty silly. and as for his penalty, by the way, I mean, wow. I mean, it's a decent conversion in rugby terms.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about 10 yards over the bar. I might mangle this pronunciation, but is it Kevin Kelleher?
Queevin.
I was close. He took a brilliant penalty.
He did.
I mean,
yeah.
He looks a very good player, by the way. I do think he looks a really promising
player. He does remind me a bit, though, of what Jedward would look like if they had a baby with each other.
Well, I don't know. It's a small gene pool. Maybe it's possible, but he side footed his penalty.
Yeah, it was very good.
Into the roof of the net.
It was very good.
So yeah, he was the victor on the day. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I've seen a piece doing the rounds this morning on the Telegraph. Are people scoring more penalties? It's a small sample size.
You have to get some. I couldn't tell you from an Arsenal perspective.
Yeah, we'll never find out
Arsenal. No.
Sadly, we'll never be able to know. With Arsenal, it's an even smaller sample size.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does seem like shootouts. I thought it was a lockdown thing. You know, I thought it was like absence of crowds. People could just stick penalties away.
Right.
But last night, I mean, those Chelsea players, they were taking second into the Liverpool fans. You know, every kick was a pressure kick. And until Kepa, they were outstanding. And then, wow.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
What do you think Edouard Mendy is thinking this morning? Because, like, you're the number one goalkeeper at a club.
Well, he had an outstanding game as well.
Oh, did he?
He made some unbelievable saves.
Wow.
He made one in the first half from Sadio Mane, a kind of double reaction save. I mean, he's a fantastic goalkeeper as well.
Mm.
A lot of good goalkeepers in this league, I really think. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot between them. And he was brilliant. And so that was all the more strange because he also made a save in the last minute in stoppage time from Van Dijk from a header that was fantastic. And, I do wonder if that might have given him a bit of a psychological advantage. I think Liverpool would have been quite relieved to see him coming off because he'd had such a good game.
Yeah.
But it was predetermined.
Sure.
Apparently.
No, I mean, that makes sense. You know, you only make that change if you've thought about it and this is a plan. And clearly, they would have spoken about it in team meetings and Mendy would have been aware of it and Kepa would have been aware of what was going on as well. But, like, I think if you're the supposed penalty expert and you fucking get out of the way of 11 penalties and then smash one over the bar, I mean, it's... I don't quite know how to explain it. I mean, Mendy must be sitting there this morning going like, what the fuck? Like, I would have stopped one of them at least. I would have gotten near one of them, surely. And, you know.
Kepa only really got near one. He got his hand to one.
Late on, quite late, wasn't it? Dived past it almost.
But, I mean, of course, we all know what Mendy should have done, and that's refused to come off. Which is what Kepa did to Sarri, didn't he, a few years back?
Oh, yeah. That would have been fucking
amazing. It was exactly
amazing.
That situation. I think it was it Caballero, maybe? Willie Caballero?
Maybe so, yeah.
They wanted to bring on for the shootout, and Kepa refused. And then, you know, it kind of comes full circle. He comes on for Mendy, and you have to say, loses Chelsea the shootout. I mean, listen, I won't shed any tears over that.
Oh, no. No. I mean, as I said in the blog this morning, I hope that somehow this, you know, this decision that Tuchel made and Mendy's potential disgruntlement with everything will spread like some kind of blight through the Chelsea squad. until it just reaches, you know, the point of no return, and they become, well, I don't know what, but just I hope it all goes wrong for them from here. Because it's a moment, isn't it, in a season where, you know, it's a trophy and you're in a final, and losing in a final is rarely a good thing in the sense that, like, you don't just brush it off, even if you want to downplay the significance of the trophy or whatever it is. You don't brush it off. And I know Chelsea have won lots and they're experienced and all that kind of stuff, but
they've won about three this year, haven't they, or something. You know, they've won the kind of European and club World Cup-y type things. So I think they'll get over it. But I do think it stings losing to another Premier League club. You know, I think that that is in a domestic cup to a rival. I do think it will hurt them. I mean, you know, people are looking at their league position and wondering if it could be vulnerable. And there are things that aren't working at Chelsea. I mean, Romelu Lukaku didn't start yesterday. He came on, had a pretty disjointed game, spent a lot of time offside when he didn't need to be. You know, they're not in the greatest of shape. But listen, I'm my eyes are fixed firmly on fourth place. Yeah. I don't want to look too far about that. I'll get a nose blue.
I mean, they have. I mean, if we win, like we're on 24 points, 45. Chelsea 25, 50. So we could be, if we win our
game in hand. So we could be with 2 points. Yeah,
two points of them. Off. And then.
And we've still got to go to Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
You know, which will be 3 points in the bag, of course.
No problem.
Martinelli's going to run from his own goal line to score in that game.
Yeah, and hopefully just every single Chelsea player slips over. Every single one of them. Like a sea of falling soldiers just parting like the sea for...
As he approaches the penalty area... Edouard Mendy steps out of goal so Kepa can step in, and then Martinelli, like, you know, rounds him four times.
Or he just steps out of the way and lifts up his shirt to reveal a t-shirt saying "fuck Kepa," something like that. That would be quite good.
A picture of Virgil van Dijk and Kepa cowers in the corner of the goal.
Speaking of goalkeepers, did you watch the Aaron Ramsdale? Cam Harry Ramsdale.
Someone in the Arsenal social media team had a very bright idea to put a camera on Aaron Ramsdale for the entirety of that Wolves game.
Yeah, it was good. I really, really liked his reaction to the goal that we conceded.
I thought that was... Do you know what? I thought that was the most interesting part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the celebrations are great. And there's quite a funny thing where he's sort of doing the Lacazette celebration dance, like half doing it to himself in the goal, walk. But I do think the reaction to the goal was the most interesting thing, and I particularly given that, and I saw David Seaman saying this on Ben Fozzie Fozcast's podcast the other day, that Ramsdale is someone who shouts at his defenders a lot.
Yeah,
you know? and Seaman was saying you need to be a bit careful with that because at a certain point they stop listening. But I found it really interesting that when actually a big mistake has happened and a goal has been conceded, he has completely the opposite response to it.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't shout at anybody and is immediately sort of on Gabriel.
Yeah, I think there's something to the shouting thing, obviously. But it depends what that is. If it's communication, if he's talking to them. Like they did one, do you remember they did... a similar one for Matt Ryan during lockdown. It was maybe the game at Aston Villa where we conceded that really scrappy goal in the opening couple of minutes and then we couldn't find a way through. But he was talking all the time and shouting at his defenders all the time in various languages, in Spanish, in English, you know, but talking to them, telling them where he needed them to be, telling them, you know, who was behind them, all that kind of stuff. So I think that kind of shouting is obviously good. But, you know, when you're when something bad happens, like conceding a goal, and it was a sloppy goal to concede, it was poor play from the two central defenders, I think, you know, the reaction that he had was just to sort of keep them focused and, you know, give them an encouraging pat on the back or whatever it was. And I thought that was really, really interesting because, you know, you might feel as a goalkeeper that your defenders have kind of let you down there. If you're precious about your clean sheet, you might want to, you know, have a little bit of a pop at them. But it's an honest mistake. And I think it's quite interesting as well, the reaction that we had as fans to that mistake. Because go back in time, not too far back in time, not talking dinosaurs here, but go back in the not too distant past. And if our central defenders had contrived to concede a goal like that, I think we would have been apoplectic as a fan base. Because the frequency with which those kind of mistakes happened with the defenders that we had is, you know, is hard to take. It's intolerable after a certain point. You know, you just can't take it anymore. It becomes just impossible to look at these guys and think of them in any positive way. Whereas what we've seen from Ben White and Gabriel this season has been so promising. Like the partnership that they're developing is really encouraging. Still some way to go, but they're both 24 years of age. They're both still learning. 24 is pretty young in the life of a central defender. And they've banked such an amount of goodwill based on what they've done for the most part this season, that when the mistake happened, it's like, oh, that's careless, it's sloppy or whatever. But certainly not in my experience. I'm sure there were people out there doing this, but I didn't see them get like absolutely coated off on Twitter or anything like that. You know, I think there is a sense that, okay, this was a mistake, but these guys don't make a lot of those mistakes. And I think that's really quite an interesting thing when you consider how traumatized we've been from our defending / defenders in recent years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the phrase is credit in the bank, isn't it? I mean, they've really built that up over the course of the season. I mean, White and Gabriel, think how much time they spend on the ball. Think how many passes they make in the course of the game. I can only really remember two that really got us in serious trouble. One was this Gabriel one, which Hwang scored from. Mm. The other was Ben White at Burnley. I don't know if you remember at Turf Moor. He went back to Ramsdale at short and a penalty was given and then overturned. Ramsdale got a toe on it.
Do you remember?
And I think they're the only instances. And given that, playing out from the back and these kind of short passes in the defensive third is such a big part of our game. It's pretty impressive, really, that we've come through, you know, in that way. But I also think that there's something about the attitude of the players that maybe means the crowd is a bit less inclined to get on their back. I mean, I think sometimes these reactions are cumulative.
But yeah.
Without wishing to dig out an individual, you know, I do remember times when our centre-halves would make a mistake and maybe they would throw their hands up or sort of accusingly point at a teammate or something like that.
We know who you're talking about, yeah.
And you just don't really see that from this group to the same extent. Yeah. And I thought that was evident in the immediate aftermath of that moment. Maybe that's easier when things are going well, you know, and I accept that.
Yeah. But when things are going well, it means that you've got a team that isn't making that many mistakes as well. You know, it kind of works.
Exactly.
It works both ways.
Self-fulfilling. I actually thought, to be honest, I've rewatched the game since and I thought it played into Gabriel's performance a bit. I didn't think he had his best game in general.
Certainly in the first half, he had his moments.
But that's kind of understandable, I think. And I was really delighted for him that Arsenal won that game. Mm. And that it can sort of be compartmentalised as it should be. You know, put in a box and pretty much forgotten about. Because it was an aberration of the sort that he really has not produced with any kind of regularity this season. By and large, he's been excellent.
Yeah, that's true. And I think Arteta made a comment afterwards as well, didn't he, where he said, I like when somebody can make a mistake and the team reacts positively to it, and we never talk about that mistake again, which, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I don't think Gabriel, like, needs to be told, doesn't need to have, like, 2 hours of intensive video coaching to look at that mistake to figure out what he did wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that, but it is one of those moments where I think when you are a central defender, and still quite a young one, both of them still 24, so they're in central defender terms, relatively young. These are moments that you you learn from and you take stuff away from, and it's about concentration as much as anything else, isn't it? Just a reminder that if you do switch off even a little bit at Premier League level, mistakes in your own final third are going to get punished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely,
you know, but the more positive thing obviously is the reaction that we showed, and the way that we found a way to win that game that I don't think we would have done last season. There were too many games where we went behind and couldn't find a goal, an equalizer, let alone a winner. And it's another thing where, look, you don't want this to be how you win most of your games. You don't want to go behind and then have to, like, keep scrapping and keep scrapping. But knowing that you can do it is a good thing. And actually, Arteta's comment afterwards, he was asked, would you have preferred to win this game convincingly or win it like you won it? And he said, I think win it like we won it, because you take so much away from it. And there were, of course, it was that record where we hadn't won a game when we were trailing at halftime and come back to win a game. So I think he wanted to get that out of the way. But that's another interesting thing to consider, isn't it? That the energy that is created by the pressure that you put on, the tactical changes you make, the effort and endeavor of the players, and the outpouring of everything between players, fans, staff, stadium, all of it, that energy is considered, or certainly something that Arteta considers, really valuable.
Yeah, I think so. And the injection of kind of momentum and belief that it gives you does have a real value. And Arsenal, you know, they triumphed over adversity, and it's not just their record of having you know, not come from behind in the second half. It's Wolves' record. Wolves had an outstanding record in games where they took the lead, and I think, you know, Arsenal would have been well aware of that. And yeah, I thought it would have been very easy for that early goal to kind of derail them. And you reflect as well. I mean, I remember Arteta's comments about Ramsdale saying he watched footage of when Sheffield United conceded goals, and they conceded plenty last season, to see how they respond. And I think that attitude is reflected in a lot of these outfield players as well. I had the pleasure of watching it, knowing the result.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine how stressful it was.
It was exhausting. It was exhausting. Yeah. I was wrecked. Absolutely wrecked at the end of that game.
Yeah. I mean, across the two Wolves games, it's, you know, we've all aged a few years, I suspect. But we come through it really strong, and it's been a very, very good month for Arsenal. And I think one that we needed, you know, I think for lots of reasons, January felt like a bit of a buffeting.
Yeah. January wasn't good. January wasn't good, obviously.
January's never good, really, is it? January's not a nice month.
No, but like when you look at the, three defeats, two draws in January. I know that only two of those games were in the Premier League, and a couple of three were cup games, but it's still not nice to have the L's and the D's when you're looking at the results. And I prefer the W's, which we've got, you know, and to beat Wolves twice. And like, I can't say I paid a great deal of attention to Wolves this season. Mm-hmm. But I'm, you know, quite impressed by them, even if I think, you know, some of their tactics came back to bite them a little bit with regards to time wasting and things like that. But they are a good team. They're a good team, and they've got some very interesting players as well. So to take 6 points from them this season, particularly given their position in the league table, is very impressive from our part.
Yeah. I mean, they went to Old Trafford and won. They went to White Hart Lane and won. They've taken a lot of points off teams immediately around us. They are one of the teams immediately around us. And I agree, they've got a great production line of talent. I mean, everyone knows about their, you know, network and their links to Jorge Mendes. But, yeah, some really exciting players there. I mean, Neto, who's just coming back, I think is excellent. I think Ruben Neves, as much as he's irritated us all, is a very fine midfield player.
Yeah.
I thought Huang looked interesting as well the other night. They've always got good young players in.
Yeah.
I think 6 points, I mean, look, 4 would have been pretty good. 6 is excellent.
It really is. I suppose one thing that didn't get discussed a great deal was the absence of Takahiro Tomiyasu.
Yeah.
He was back in the squad for the previous game against Brentford, but has an issue with his other calf. I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, obviously it's bad that he's injured, but is it better that he's got a fresh injury, or would, you know, should we be more worried if he'd aggravated the existing injury?
I don't know. I heard about it on the day, minutes after I'd published a profile about Tomiyasu coming back into the team.
It's all your fault. Nice.
Yeah, Captain Jinx strikes again. And I have to say, it wasn't good news, as in I was sort of told this is a substantial setback and could miss, you know, a couple of weeks. Obviously, I hope that's wrong and I hope he's back ASAP, but it is, I think, a significant blow, as well as Cedric has done. I mean, we shouldn't forget how important and how good Tomiyasu has been, and there are some tough tests on the horizon.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, when we start going away from home, you know, you really would like the solidity, the reliability that he provides. Even just the height, I think, is valuable on that back post. So we'll have to wait and see if proper update from the club. But at the moment, I'd be surprised if he faced Watford this weekend, for sure.
Yeah, I reckon it's usually, what, 2 or 3 weeks if you have a muscle tear. So
calf strain. Outside chance of Leicester, maybe, I guess.
Yeah.
They might be looking at that Liverpool game on the 16th of March and thinking, let's try and get him ready for that. Because he's missed a fair chunk of football now.
He has, hasn't he? I'm just trying to think. Because he was out and then he came back. So he played against Man City. Mm. And then we brought him back for the game against Liverpool. On the 20th of January. So in the last 2 months, in January and February, he's played 2 games. Mm. He didn't play it all over the festive period, and I know a couple of games are cancelled there as well. So, yeah, it is a bit of a worry.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he physically has adapted so well to the league. You know, his power and his athleticism is not in question. But you do have to remember he is coming from a background of playing in Belgium and then in Serie A. It's a very different degree of intensity, and maybe it was to a certain extent inevitable that physically he might hit a bit of a barrier. Also, maybe it won't be the worst thing, you know. Maybe it will have effectively acted as a kind of winter layoff for him, and we'll get a refreshed Tomiyasu in the second half of the season. I know that as much as he has sort of thrived in the Premier League, I know he's found it very demanding as well.
Mm.
And it's interesting, like, you know, this is a guy who can play centre back, but one of the things that I did hear about him is that he says he's quite relieved that he's not playing centre back, that he's going through this physical adaptation playing as a right back, because the intensity of the one-to-one challenges in the centre is so high in the Premier League that he's actually more comfortable for now while he's acclimatising on the right.
That is quite interesting, because I would have thought that playing fullback would
be... Stamina demands are much...
Yeah. It'd be much more demanding.
But I think it's the power element, you know. But, yeah, I think he's been a really good signing, and I can't wait to have him back. I do think Cedric deserves some credit for the way in which he's deputised, and I think the fact the team is functioning so much better has helped him kind of fit in relatively seamlessly. But, you know, I'm looking particularly at maybe the Leicester game, the Liverpool game, even Villa away. You know, they've got some good forward players. It'd be great to have Tomiyasu back.
Yeah, it sure would. Shall we take a break here? Let's take a break. We've got some questions. There's been some an announcement from the club about season tickets and season ticket prices. So as a season ticket holder, I'll ask you about that. And we've got more questions as well that we'll do in part two. So hang tight. We'll be right back right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. You can do that at patreon.com/ArsBlog. So I mentioned the season ticket prices. Benjamin Brooks, who's at Bearded_Chap on Twitter, he says, goodly birthday, blah, blah, blah. Thank you very much. Arsenal are expected to post significant losses over the next day or so. How much of this will be optics and perception, and or how much will it have a material impact on our summer business? And just to sort of go over a couple of the things with the season ticket, Arsenal say, after holding general admission ticket prices flat for seven consecutive seasons, all season tickets and match day tickets will be going up by 4% for season 2022-23. You're a season ticket holder. Initial reaction to a price rise?
I never want prices to go up.
Yeah.
It's my basic reaction. It's expensive to watch Arsenal, and I'm disappointed. I don't want it to happen. I understand, of course, the financial context around it. But you know, it's frustrating, I think, because what does it gain Arsenal to raise tickets by 4%? I think we're talking somewhere between £2 and 3 million over the course of a season. When you place that in the context of the club's commercial revenues. It's small fry. And at a time where, you know, we're still coming out of the pandemic, a lot of people are feeling the pinch. You know, utility bills in the UK are about to skyrocket in April. The cost of living here is going up substantially. Food and things like that are very expensive at this point in time in the UK. It will hit people in the pocket, and I don't want to see that happen. So, yeah, it's disappointing. It's disappointing, I think. What do you think? I mean, is that fair, what I'm saying?
No, I think it's absolutely fair. I do wonder what the... I mean, 2 or 3 million sounds like a pittance, really, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
But it's clearly not when you think about it. It's, you know, 2 or 3 million pounds. People might say...
Yeah, what the club would say is... in fact, I think what they have, the case they have made privately, is that I could say it's 3 million this year. But, you know, they previously held the prices for 7 years. They've given no guarantees they'd do that again. But let's say it's over the next 5 years. Of course, that's 15 million quid. And suddenly that begins to have a bigger role in budget. It sounds like more substantial revenue. But, yeah, I think what will be interesting is the financial results that follow this, the context it places it within. I mean, Arsenal are going to lose a huge amount of money.
Why do you think they announced the season ticket price rise before announcing the losses? Because that might have, in some way, have, if not mitigated it, but made... made it easier to understand why they made the decision. So if they announced, like, we've lost £150 million, so one of the consequences of that is we're going to have to raise season ticket prices. We're, you know, we don't like it, but, you know, this is the world that we're living in right now, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying people would appreciate it or like it, but they might understand it.
Yeah, I don't know why they've done that. I thought they might do it together. I thought they might say, look, we've lost over 100 million quid. I mean, what's interesting is season tickets have not been a good revenue stream for them, you know, during the pandemic, because obviously the stadiums weren't full. So yeah. I wonder if for fans it will feel all the... I don't know if that will make cushion the blow or not, that they haven't really... been paying out what they would expect to for season tickets over the past couple of years, or will it feel like more of a shock to the system? I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers the club are putting out now. The average season ticket price currently is about £1,200, £1,219. If Arsenal qualify for the Champions League next season, the increase on that will be £49. Now, the weird thing is, people's tickets may actually be cheaper next season because there's a cup credit held over from this season because we went out of the cups early,
particularly
FA Cup.
Because there were, what is it, 7 cup games?
Something like that. So most people are due, I think everybody's due some sort of cup rebate, which in many instances will actually be bigger than the price increase. So people's season tickets, despite this 4% rise, may be cheaper next year than this. But that says more about, I think, Arsenal's underperformance in the cups. But again, it does cushion the blow. I feel fortunate. I can live with this price hike. I can still afford my ticket. And I will pay it because Arsenal have me hostage in my heart. But
yeah,
at the same time, I'm always going to come down on the side of the fans. I don't want to see ticket prices increase. If anything, I want to see them go down as the club's commercial revenues, TV revenues continue to soar. I feel like fans in the stadium should be the people feeling the benefit of
that. Yeah, but that never happens. Ticket prices never come down. Even if your commercial revenue rises, commercial revenue is... tied in with success in a way. So the more that you can generate from commercial revenue by sponsorship and advertising and partnerships and all that kind of stuff is in part due to what you're doing on the pitch. And if you've got a really good team, then the tickets, rather than go down, become even more valuable, if you know what I mean, because people want to see a good team and a winning team. I mean, there are some discounts. They say here a new discount of 25% is being introduced for general admission season ticket holders between 19 and 21. Canon members age 17 and 18 already benefit from 57% discount. We will improve access for junior gunners 16 and under to attend matches with red members in the family enclosure, still at a 66% discount, enabling more young fans to come to matches. So I think you and other people have pointed out this season that the demographic inside the stadium and also with the away support has changed a little bit. It feels like a younger crowd.
Yeah, and I was chatting to someone from the box office not long ago about how many fans this season took a season ticket holiday. You know, people were offered the opportunity to not take up their season ticket this year, and that led to a whole collection of new fans who'd maybe been waiting for the opportunity to get to go to games regularly, getting the chance to have a season ticket this season. And I do wonder as well how much that fresh blood, those fresh faces have kind of... well, literally rejuvenated the support base and brought a new energy. And it's been a really positive energy. Of course, that's helped by the team too and what's happened on the pitch. But I personally think that 25% discount for 19 to 21-year-olds, I think that's quite important. Like, if I think back to when I was kind of that age, if I'd been offered a season ticket full price then, like, that 25% off, it could make the difference. Like, it's still expensive, you know, it's still very steep and difficult, but I think it's really important that we keep the next generations of people who are going to fill this ground coming in.
So I think that's a new one's hostage in their hearts.
Exactly. So they can take money off them for the next 40 years of their life, whatever it is. They can bleed them. I mean, the thing is, like, if I was sat here in, like, full journalist mode, like, I can make the arguments for this rise, and I can illustrate why, you know, the club's been severely hit in its revenues and it needs to do what it can to be competitive and, you know...
Spent a lot of money on players.
Spent a lot of money on players. We've seen the benefit of that. 4% in context. It doesn't feel too crazy. It's been 7 years, as the club point out. I can make all those points. Mm. But as a fan, I'm always going to say... don't put the ticket prices up. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to divorce myself from that.
Yeah. They do say we will be investing in improving Emirates Stadium. This includes a major refurbishment of the roof, new big screens, turnstile readers to speed up entry, and the wraps outside the stadium. So,
well, I'll be interested to see, exactly what comes of that. Because I do think, you know, I like the Emirates a lot, but I think... as we've said before, there are ways in which it could be improved. And it sounds like the club are very committed to doing that. Mm. Let's see what they come up with.
I guess that would be relatively expensive work as well.
It's in the millions, for sure. Yeah.
You know, because it's not like you're going down to fucking Ted the Tiler and getting him to get some knockoff fucking slates on your roof. You know, it's not quite that.
And they've got a video of us singing The Time of Their Life already. All they need to do is project that onto the stadium. How much is a projector? A couple hundred quid? Yeah. Job done.
Job done. That's it. I mean, how much does a giant TV cost? How much do big screens cost? I mean, they must be a lot. I mean, you can't go to Harvey Norman and get a fucking...
No, I have seen it quoted as being in the millions, the renovations. So again, you know, that's got to be paid for. Mm. I suppose when we see the full financial results, it will be interesting to place, you know, that couple of million quid that Arsenal get from this price rise in context, in proper context.
Yeah.
And I am curious about the fact they've done it in this order. I'm sure they must have their reasons, but I do think... laid in the context of the scale of the losses the club suffered during the pandemic, whether it might have seemed a bit more palatable. We shall see. good time, I guess, to get it out as well. The club are, you know, there's a lot of goodwill, isn't there, right now, off the back of the Wolves game. So I think sneaking this out at this point is probably not the worst thing.
No, yeah. I mean, it's a difficult one to swallow at the best of times, but, you know, when things have been going pretty well. Well, we'll wait and see what the reaction is. I haven't seen any reaction. I'm sure the fan groups will have been aware of this coming, and so I'll read what they have to say afterwards.
And they've been pushing against it, you know.
Of course,
and they've been asking for guarantees of that this won't happen the following year, and, you know, or for a certain period of time. Unsuccessfully, ultimately, you know, the club have taken this decision that they're going to do it. And they've done it. And I suppose the tricky thing is, I may be wrong about this, but if this club qualifies for Europe next season, those tickets will just disappear. Do you know what I mean? The demand
supply
is...
Supply and demand.
They're the rules. And demand is probably as high right now as it's been for some time, because people want to watch this team.
Yeah. Well, I hope that continues, obviously. You know, the success of the team plays a part in all of this, and hopefully they can continue their progress. Do you want to move on and get a couple of questions?
Yeah, let's get into the other questions.
Sure.
By the way, I've just got to shout out this guy. Highbury JD sent in a question. The question was, when small clubs try and provoke the Arsenal into a rivalry, should we respond with sensible maturity and just ignore them? And then he's added a clip of the firework over Emirates Stadium saying, here's a slow-mo of the firework I set up for the post-Wolves celebrations. I believe it was actually Highbury JD's wife who set the firework off on full time as a pre-planned event.
You've got to give huge kudos to that, because it looked for some time like that firework was not going to go off. They must have been in the back garden or whatever going, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Can you imagine when the Lacazette goal went in and they're like, yes, we've won the game, but also, where's the matches?
Yeah, very funny. I just think a solitary firework.
It was a big one.
Funnier.
It was a big one.
A big one.
It was a big one, wasn't it? Might have been one, but it was, you know, certainly a powerful rocket. Not quite like.
I enjoyed it.
Like,
I think we should make it a tradition every time Wolves come to the Emirates, have Mrs. Highbury JD on standby.
Yeah.
Or just give, you know, Aaron Ramsdale a Catherine wheel and a box of matches. He could just set it off on the pitch.
Yeah, he would as well, probably.
But let's have another question. Oh, I thought this was interesting. Christian Blick said, hello, blogs. Ramsdale cam was great. We've had Arteta, Odegaard and Tierney cam. Which player would you like to have next?
That is a good question. I think maybe Thomas Partey for me. Because we talked about this on Friday, actually. Maybe myself and Ryan, we were talking a bit about Partey, and or maybe it was with you on last week's show. I can't quite remember. But you know, he made the comments over Christmas or just around the new year where he rated himself 4 out of 10. And since then, he's been not 4 out of 10 at all. He's been much, much higher than that. But I would like to see that aspect of him, because, you know, it's... You and many of the people listening to this will have seen him live and in person and playing in the stadium, whereas I think it's hard really to get a true measure of a player until you see them play live in a stadium. You see aspects of their game and the way that they approach certain scenarios, which rounds out your knowledge of the player, I think. So I would like to see that. I'd like to see how he operates in tandem with the central defenders, but also the two midfielders who are now ostensibly ahead of him. And I mean positionally, you know, with Martin Odegaard and Granit Xhaka on the other side. I'd love to watch how he plays a game. I thought he was very, very good against Wolves on Thursday night. So to have that, to have that footage of him in that scenario, I'd be really fascinated to look at it.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout. I think he's been excellent of late. I would go for Lacazette, actually. I just think he's involved in so much in the game, and so much of it is kind of slightly niggly off the ball stuff that I would be curious to follow that for 90 minutes and just see like the highlights, his attempts to win free kicks and penalties, and very difficult, as we discussed earlier, as an Arsenal player to do those things.
Yeah,
I just think some of the kind of one-to-one collisions he gets involved in could be entertaining. And also because he's the captain and he's quite vocal, you know, I think that would be quite compelling.
That'd be
viewing.
Quite a good one. Saka
it's
too
always
is
interesting,
another one.
To be honest. Saka, yeah. Just as a series of clips of him being kicked up in the air, I imagine.
Yeah,
no punishment.
Yeah, the referee telling him to get up. Here's a question. Dean Van Wyn says, having lost the first three games, top four always seemed unlikely for Arsenal. Now they're arguably favourites for fourth. Do you worry about the effects of this pressure on a group that doesn't have too much experience in this situation, i.e. trying to reach their goal in a league format?
We've spoken about pressure before, and you know, I believe that this group is a very emotional group, and pressure, we don't know how that's going to affect them. The only thing I would say is that there is something to be said for kind of the bravery and naivety of youth in these circumstances. You know, they're not haunted by failure in the way that some players might be encumbered. I always think that about the Euros final. I was reflecting on Saka. I think I was listening actually to your pod, your 2021 pod with Elliot.
Right.
Were, summarizing 2021 as part of the big Arseblog 20 release the other day. And part of the discussion was about Saka and how brilliantly he's kind of responded to what was a kind of harrowing moment potentially in the Euros final where he missed that penalty. And I really believe that Gareth Southgate picked young players in that shootout because he believed that with that youth would come a certain resilience, that it would weigh less heavily on them than it would on someone near the end of their career who thinks, I'm never going to get another chance. And, you know, we can debate whether or not that's the right call. But I think Saka has kind of shown an ability to kind of shrug it off almost and refocus and go again. And I do think there is a kind of resilience in youth, a fearlessness that could equally be to our advantage in this home straight. Hard to say. What do you think about that?
I think, look, you can have concerns, but these are the things that you have to do. As a top-level professional sports person, you have to be able to cope with pressure. You have to be able to cope with expectation. You have to be able to make progress, which I think this team is doing. I'm worried because some of them are still young and they haven't necessarily been around the block as much as you might like. But I'd rather them be in this position where, you know, maybe you find out about one or two of them that they're not quite there yet, or they won't ever be there, whatever it might be. But you've got to learn those lessons. You've got to learn those lessons, and you've got to be in these situations, these scenarios, where there is pressure based on the stakes. When the stakes are high, that is the very top of, you know, what you play the game for and what you're in the game for and why you're a professional sports person, you know? So I think, bring it on. I still kind of make United favourites. Although
dropped
they have
big points again at the weekend against Watford. Incredible they didn't win that game. They had lots of opportunities.
Maybe because I forgot about that actually. So they've played, what, three games more than
three
us?
Three games
and
more, yeah.
So.
And their next, have you seen their next three league fixtures?
No.
Their next three league fixtures are, I want to get this right because it's pretty daunting, Man City away, Tottenham at home,
lads,
Liverpool
Tottenham.
Away. I mean, they might get something off those teams, but I'd be staggered if they're taking maximum points.
Yeah. And then,
especially with City and Liverpool going hell for leather in the title race. You know?
And they've got a game against Atletico
in between
Atletico
Spurs
Madrid
and
in the middle of that. So,
so this is a crucial period for them. And those that Watford game, that they needed that for some breathing space.
May their legs fall off and their hearts be broken. That's all I can say.
It's interesting, though. You know, I take a lot of heart from what you just said, because you said we might find out about one or two of these players that they're not quite there yet when the pressure's on.
Mm.
But I sort of think that will be painful and it will be difficult. But if that is what we learn, how nice that it's they're not there yet, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than they're never going to be good enough. You know, if we, I hope we succeed desperately, but if we fail, I think almost whatever happens, we've got a better chance next season because of the age of this team.
Mm.
And that is a very good position to be in.
I agree. And we've got a big chance.
We really
do,
yeah.
And, you know, we've got maybe an opportunity that realistically maybe the players didn't think they would have. So I wonder, is it... I think there's some pressure, but it isn't necessarily expectation. Is it expectation at this point? Would it be wrong to expect Arsenal to finish in the top four like I want them to, obviously? I think we could make real progress that way. Do we recalibrate what we expect from this team based on what we've done for the majority of the season, leaving aside those opening three games?
Yeah, I think we should. You know, we have to update expectations accordingly. I have to say, I have to do this because Gunnar MCC on the Discord said, did you see the salty Man U reporter who said whoever gets fourth has got it by default? And I don't know if you saw this, but...
No, I didn't.
Samuel Luckhurst, I don't know if there's any affiliation with Man U or not. Oh, yeah, chief Manchester United writer for Manchester Evening News. Quite a strong affiliation there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Samuel said, whoever ends the season in fourth will have done so by default. Those who miss out might be closer to the bottom than the top. It will be fairer for the top three to qualify for the Champions League. And I just think that's such a load of shit. I'm so tired of people saying, nobody wants fourth. It's like, are you aware of Arsenal and what we've been doing? Since since we lost those first three games at the start of the season, we've had, I'd say, two minor blips. One where we lost to City and Everton, United and Everton in the space of the week. January, we had two league games where we didn't win. All right, we played very well against Man City and drew with Burnley. Other than that, I think we've been pretty consistent in the league, and we've had to be to climb from 20th, rock bottom, negative goal difference to one of the favourites for the top four.
Yeah.
And if we get it, it's a hell of a recovery and absolutely deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. It is not because somebody else threw it away. It's because of what we will have done on the pitch, you know?
Yeah.
I
just think it's a ludicrous argument. I mean, listen, I can see why they're saying it from a Manchester United perspective.
Yeah.
Because if United fail to get top four, given their investment, given their position, given where they were last season, that is a big failure.
Mm.
But for us as a team who coming from, I hate to say it, but eighth or whatever it is, and the start that we had, if we get it, it will be something certainly worth celebrating.
Yeah. Remember, United finished second last season. So
exactly, yeah. And they bought Ronaldo, you know, and they bought Sancho, and they bought Rafael Varane. They were supposed to be pushing on and challenging for the league. And, you know, yeah, it's... I mean, Daniel Zakiri replied to the tweet, actually, and I thought it was such a good reply. He said, absolute dreck based on sour grapes. Arsenal have won seven of their last nine league games and have been chugging along at close to 2 points per game since Boxing Day 2020. Our team's not as good as the best three in Europe, considered shit now. And, yeah. I just think it's really pissing me off, actually, because Spurs and United keep dropping points. This idea of, like, nobody wants fourth. We really want fourth. Yeah, and we play like a team that wants fourth.
Exactly. Did you watch the game the other night when we scored in the 96th minute? You know, we kept going right until
but
the end.
But do we want it, Andrew?
No.
No one wants it. No one wants fourth. Pissing me off. It's fine. It's fine. Let them...
Yeah.
Sleep on us and we'll
hopefully I mean, on that, Fleds on the Discord said, with Wolves dropping points, who is actually our biggest rival for fourth place, Man United or West Ham?
I like the omission, the complete omission of Tottenham Hotspur. Unfortunately, they ran into a Leeds side in absolute disarray this weekend. Although I have to say, I'm sorry to see Bielsa go. I do, you know, there's a lot of kind of identikit coaches in this league, and a lot of games can feel the same. And I have enjoyed, if Leeds are on telly, I'll watch them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And
there's a sort of mad chaos to their matches.
Yeah, he is a maverick, and I admire that. And actually, although in the Premier League and this season they've had a lot of injuries, they've been somewhat chaotic, when you look at the squad he inherited and what he did in the Championship, the team he turned them into, it was quite a remarkable achievement. And so, yeah, fair play to him. But
Well, I mean, we also have to spare a thought for the bucket makers of Leeds who will now go out of business.
The bucket merch. Yeah. And we have to thank him as well, because they were an absolute mess when we played them at Elland Road, weren't they? I mean, wow. The sort of writing was on the wall at that point in some respects. They were all over
I mean, they were missing quite a lot of players. I think they've had some big injuries this season as well, haven't they?
Season. Yeah. They haven't had Bamford, haven't had Phillips. But anyway, West Ham beat Wolves, didn't they? That was... did they? Have I got that right? 1-0 for West Ham? Yeah, I think it was at the weekend. So that's a big blow to Wolves. They've lost to Arsenal and West Ham in the space of a week. They're still right up there because their form's been good. I think I'm with you. I think, honestly, I don't want to say it. Actually, I do think Spurs are probably the most dangerous. United have got played three more times than us. And when we look at those fixtures they've got coming up, could be dropping more points. Spurs... only one game more than us, only 3 points between. We have to go to their ground, whereas we host United at the Emirates.
They're super inconsistent, though, aren't they, Spurs?
Yeah.
Like,
I'm looking at Hyde.
Loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, loss, win, loss, win. You know, that's their last, whatever... 10 or 12 fixtures in all competitions. So there's an inconsistency there. I mean, I know what you mean. If they could find a measure of consistency, then they probably would be a threat given the manager and everything else. But even he seemed at the end of his fucking tether last week.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's up and down. You never know what you're going to get from him. But I think the other thing about them is their fixture list is a little bit easier than I think some of the teams around them. So... you know, they went to City, unfortunately, got a result there. They've got United away, they've got West Ham at home, but...
Joe Willock's going to score for Newcastle to win that
game. Well, that's
game.
Good, yeah. You know. I mean, he's started his thing now where he scores in every game, 2-2 for him.
Yeah, that's it.
So, and maybe, look, maybe it's just the Arsenal fan in me that fears, you know, would hate to miss out to Tottenham. But I think they've got... they've got a good coach, you know, who if they... And they've got goal scorers, haven't they? They've got goal scorers.
That is what they've got. They've got a very potent attack and a very, very successful coach. But everything else in between is not great.
They are still Tottenham, though.
Yes, that's it.
So hope springs eternal. If we do our job, we'll be fine.
That's in our hands. That's the reality. Here's, I thought, an interesting one from the Discord, from Optimistic Gunner, who said he wanted us to do a win-lose-draw of the remaining games, but I think it's probably a bit too soon yet to bang out the Predictotron.
Yeah. We don't want to end up like Rio Ferdinand and Owen Hargreaves as well. Do you know what I mean?
He says, I have a hunch that one of our reasons for poor sales is that no one trusted our coaches and training regime, meaning players needed work or remolding when they arrived. Similarly, this is why teams trust even the cast-offs from Liverpool and Chelsea, as they know the hard work is done. Do you think the sparks from our homegrown youth will change this perception and start to bring in real money for our unwanted players? As it's clear, the coaching and training are now bang on the money. Well, certainly improving anyway. I just thought that was quite an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think... Well, look, I think perception of a club affects the price of a player. You know, if you're signing even a cast-off from Liverpool, they're coming from the great Liverpool, you know, they've got this education from Klopp and they've been part of success, and there's a cachet attached to that. And there hasn't been a great deal of cachet around Arsenal of late. And I am optimistic that as we produce more academy players and as we recruit within the Premier League as well, that will result in a better resale value. Mm. The difficulty is the way the kind of market generally has sort of deflated. You know, it's not a great time to be selling players. And so, you know, I think we've got better at it just as it's got harder, probably. Or we haven't got better at it, but we've got more saleable assets at a time when, you know, transfer fees are sort of on the wane a bit as a phenomenon. But yeah, I think basically the success of the club does influence the price of a player. I think that's a big part of it. Do you think that's true?
I think it is. I think it is. And, you know, we did have some decent sales when Arsene Wenger was kind of in his pomp, you know?
Yeah.
People, you know, the association that, well, you know, if Wenger likes a player, then he's got to be have something about him.
Exactly.
And certainly the success, if you want to call it success, I don't know a better word to use, but of the recruitment that we had in the summer, you know, we've all been pretty happy with all the signings that we've made to varying degrees. I mean, I still think, you know, it's early days for to make definitive judgments on players because we're halfway through a season. We've still got another half season to go and a lot can happen in that time. But, you know, I think there's something reassuring about the recruitment that we've made. Like most of those players, if you decided to sell them on now, you get more for them than you paid, assuming you do the sale at like the right time and you're not trying to sell them with 6 months left on their deal, you know?
Yeah, and you're not paying them to leave with a year left on their deal. But I tell you what, I thought about a player. This is kind of apropos of nothing, but I thought about a player the other day. And I was like, wow, that's the outlier. That's the model. That's what we should have done more of. Do you remember when we sold Christian Bielik to Derby? He went for an initial 7.5 million. I think the fee ultimately was scheduled to rise to like over 10. And there was some hand-wringing at the time about, oh, yeah, we've let a young player go and what's he going to be? And unfortunately, he's really struggled with injuries since then.
A couple of cruciates or something, hasn't he?
I think he's back playing now. I was sort of, you know, mulling over the Derby squad for one reason or another and saw him there. But, you know, that's the kind of deal, that's an outlier. You know, that's the sort of thing we haven't done enough of. And if the reputation of our academy continues to improve, maybe there'll be more like that down the line.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, Joe Willock, we got good money for Joe Willock.
That was very good. And Iwobi, you know.
Yeah. The best sales we've made have been players who've come out of our academy. You know, because we haven't paid for them in the first place as well, I guess.
Yeah, well, that helps. It's all profit, really.
Yeah.
What about this? Ivan Skiff says, if or Evan, probably, if we get top four, do you think the club will reassess their summer transfer targets for central midfield and striker? Theoretically, being in the Champions League attracts a higher calibre of talent, which could really make this project go bang. And then they add, congratulations on 20 years. Love the show. So much.
It's a great show. I mean, I think they're going to try and sell the idea of this developing team to any potential signings that they're going to make, whether they've got Champions League or not. you know? I think that will be the sell to convince a player who maybe could or wants to play in the Champions League. It'll be like, yeah, you can do it. You can do it, but come and be part of this team that's going to get there. So I don't know that it's going to... It might make it easier to get some of the players that they've got their eyes on, but I don't think it will change the particular players, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they might have their eye on ex-striker who, you know, wants to go to a Champions League club at this point, but maybe, you know... What am I trying to say here? I've lost my train of thought completely. Yeah, maybe you've got to convince him a bit more if you're not in the Champions League, if you've only got Europa League, let's say. But yeah. I think they will do their best to get the best possible player that they can for those positions. And clearly, those are the... Well, the one striker is the one, you know, the number one. And you can make a very good case for how... central midfield, whether it's a replacement or whatever for Granit Xhaka, in that role that Granit Xhaka is now being asked to play, which I think he did pretty well against Wolves the other night. That would be the secondary one for me. Still important, but behind the centre forward, obviously.
Yeah, I'm not sure the targets will change that dramatically. I think that they will have been identified... to be part of this project, and that I don't think those criteria will shift dramatically. So I imagine they probably will remain the same. What I do wonder is, like you say, will it be easier to persuade players to join? I think Champions League football is obviously really attractive. It increases revenue as well, might increase what you're able to spend. Mm. I mean, that will be an interesting question. Like, if Arsenal... make it to the Champions League, I wonder how many players have it in their contracts that they get a hike at that point. Or will you get a bunch of players looking to renegotiate? With some justification, I think. I think that there's going to be a lot of contract talks with Arsenal's existing squad this summer, especially if the club return to Europe.
Well, I mean, you would imagine that many of the contracts, you know, a lot of the players are new. Smith Rowe signed a new contract recently. Saka, his contract has got to be sorted this summer. There's no two ways about that. We can't have a situation where we're getting towards the final year of his contract. We just cannot have that. We've got to make sure we tie him down. But you would imagine that there is an incentives-based element to the contracts that these guys have signed. Mm-hmm. Like, here's your wages. Here's your wages if we get to the Europa League. Here are your wages / bonus if we get back into the Champions League.
Get bonus payout.
Yeah, exactly. But there was also, when the pay cuts were being pushed through, wasn't there some structure to that as well where if we got into the Champions League, they'd only... be cut X amount, and if we, you know, that kind of thing as well. So, yeah, I would say that there will be certainly a cost, but presumably the accountants know what they're doing, and whatever revenue you get then from the Champions League is not completely swallowed up by the bonuses and wage increases you have to give out.
No, I don't think so, but I do think that if Arsenal make top four, and maybe even top six, that there'll be agents knocking on doors with slightly revised demands.
Yeah.
That's the nature of football. And I think there'll be a lot of work to be done, as I say, on the contract side with the existing squad as well as the signings. As for what top four changes, I do wonder if Arsenal had Champions League football to contend with, would there be a requirement to bulk out squad a little more?
I do think so because it's not like the Europa League where
you can't just put the kids
put the kids in the group stages, because you got to get through the group stages, and the caliber of opposition is going to be better. You know, I know the groups are seeded. I don't know what kind of seeding we would get having been out of the Champions League for X amount of years and having not been in Europe for this season, what
our
kind of
taken a battering.
So what kind of seeding would we be in? What kind of a group could we find ourselves in? So who knows? You could find yourself in a group with I don't know, Barcelona, Borussia Dortmund, and you know, a decent club as well, which would make it difficult. Therefore, you've got to play your best team or something close to your best team in those games. That also has a knock-on effect for, you know, for the Premier League as well. There are issues with fatigue. There are issues with injuries. You will get more injuries if you play more games. Simple as that. So, yeah, I think having the depth to be able to cope with European football and Premier League football, because, you know, what you can't do is make progress in the Premier League and then let it slip. You can't, you know, you really have to work hard to ensure that the progress continues, or you consolidate yourself. You know, it's not really the case anymore, is it, that there's a top four or a big six? You know, there are other teams in there thereabouts now as well. You know, we talked about Wolves. West Ham have been consistent for a couple of years under David Moyes. Until this season, Leicester were in the mix a little bit as well. So it is going to become or going to remain difficult to consolidate your position and stay in the top four and stay in the Champions League, you know? And you don't want to, like, be flitting between Champions League and Europa League, Champions League and Europa League. I mean, obviously that's better than what we have right now, but you want to stay in the Champions League. So, yeah, you've got to flesh out, I think. Is that what you said? Bulk up.
I think so. We would need that, I think, to sustain. Because what would be terrible, what would be a real shame, be if we did make the top four and the rigours of that European campaign, you know, sent us backwards on the domestic front. And I think there's a risk of that. I really do. If you're not ready, if you're not prepared, if you don't have the numbers. So I think that if Arsenal make the Champions League, I'm not sure it'll change who the targets are. It might change how many there are.
Okay, let's do one more from Blade on the Discord. He says, who do you think will be our top three for goals and assists at the end of the season?
Do you know what? I don't really know who it is now. It's a terrible confession to make, but because our goals sort of come from all over the place, I know it's Smith Rowe, right?
Smith Rowe is the number one, top goal scorer, yes.
He's got
10.
Right, 9 in the league, 10, yeah, exactly. And then it's Saka, I assume?
Yeah. He's got 8, I think.
Right, yeah. Annoyingly, I've got... I've only got, I think, league numbers in front
of me. I've got all the numbers here. So Smith Rowe is number one with 10, Saka with 8. Aubameyang is our third highest scorer.
Who's
so
that?
Far. Who? He's got 7, which is about as many as he's got for Barcelona in the last week as well.
I know.
Then Lacazette and Nketiah with 5 each. All of Eddie's are in cup competitions. Then Martinelli with 4, Odegaard with 4, Pepe is 3, Gabriel 3. And then there's some onesers. We've got some onesers. Tierney, Partey, Callum Chambers, and Charlie Patino are the other goal scorers. In terms of assists...
Right.
The numbers I have are probably a bit skewed because I'm looking at Transfermarkt, and I think they include penalties won as an assist, which it isn't really. But they have Lacazette on 6, Pepe on 5, Saka on 4, Odegaard 4, Martinelli 3, Tierney 3, Tavares 2, Smith Rowe 2, Cedric 2, Aubameyang 2, and some onesies, Elneny, Partey, Maitland-Niles, Tomiyasu and Nketiah, and even Granit Xhaka's got an assist to his name. Xhaka without a goal this season as well. So yeah, I think it's fair to, I would say the top three goal scorers are going to be Smith Rowe, Saka, and probably Lacazette.
Yeah, I think so too. Martinelli's the only one who you could see breaking into that group, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he will surpass them. Assists, I mean, yeah. On that basis, I'm going to say, I'm gonna keep Lacazette up in my three. I just think, you know, he's involved in a lot in the final third, and naturally in that role is, you know, if it's Saka or Smith Rowe having the shot, there's a decent chance that that he's the guy laying it off. I think Saka will be there too. But then the guy who I would say has got a real chance of pushing into that top three has got to be Martin Odegaard.
Yeah.
In terms of the creativity he offers, and also set piece delivery. I'd say Odegaard will be in there. But I might have Saka and Lacazette just ahead. What about you?
I think it'll be Odegaard, Saka, and yeah, maybe Lacazette. Pepe's an interesting one as well, given how well he did the other night and what an impact he had on the game. Quite interesting as well, coming after the comments that Mikel Arteta made about how he's seen a different Pepe and all that kind of stuff, which I think is just kind of talk from a manager in public about a player. I mean, maybe he has.
It's interesting, after the game, in fact, before this, Arteta said this in a TalkSport interview, a few people had said to me, you know, Pepe really went above and beyond to play in this game.
Because he's...
he's a father, he's had a child.
A new child, dad, yeah.
I don't know if he had one before. And he'd missed training and a bit of a sleepless night, at least one, and... You know, he made it very clear he wanted to play. And, you know, that's a really positive thing. It suggests that people want to be involved, and he should absolutely want to be involved. But, who knows if he's turned a corner or if Mikel Arteta's just sort of trying to massage the best out of him. I mean, I think I'm right in saying the goal and assist he produced the other night were his first of each in the Premier League this season.
He's barely played.
Yeah.
He really hasn't played.
I think he's had 5 starts in the league, something like that. So,
timely. Yeah,
500 odd minutes, you know, which is
not very much.
Less than a third of what Bukayo Saka's had. Very timely. And he, as you've pointed out many times, he tends to build momentum towards the end of the season. So, yeah, I think he'll make a contribution.
Yeah.
Whether or not it'll be enough to push into those top three, I'm not so sure.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. It'd be nice if, you know, a couple of them went on some streaks, some goal-scoring streaks. I mean, what do you think, just before we go, it's not a question, but do you feel like, even though it went down as an own goal, Lacazette will feel the benefit of that ball nestling in the back of the net? I mean, it was, you know, his touch, it was his shot, which was miskicked, in fairness. So there's an element of good fortune to it. But it's so often the case that a striker, when they're going through a run of bad form, you know, gets a goal out of nowhere, and all of a sudden it takes the pressure off and they feel... you know, they feel more comfortable, or they're more decisive in front of goal. Whatever it is, whatever the blockage is, it's clear. Do you think that, even though that's a Sa own goal, Lacazette will really think, you know, that's my goal, and it's kind of just been taken away from me?
I do, and I do think there are some positive trends. I mean, I think we spoke about this last week. You know. He had chances against Wolves in the away game, the one-on-one, the header from the Cedric cross. Against Brentford, he had the ball in the net, but Xhaka was offside. He had 8 shots in this Wolves game, the home tie.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't think many people have done that this season. I think only 2 other players have done that in any game. Now, granted, are they the best shots? No. But, you know... if you buy enough tickets, you might win the lottery. And I think we as a team are getting him into better goal scoring positions. I also think it shouldn't be forgotten that he can finish. I mean, this is, when the circumstances are right, he's a bit of a Goldilocks finisher, but he strikes the ball well and he can hit it cleanly. I think with a bit of confidence, there are a few goals in him. I'm not saying he's going to turn into... Harry Kane or, you know, anything like that, but Mo Salah. But I do think he should be able to contribute between now and the end of the season. I hope he derives some confidence. I mean, it is a skewed finish for the Wolves game. It's not going in. And Jose Sa, who's had an amazing season, has had two tricky nights, actually, against Arsenal. So we've got quite lucky there. But
I enjoyed his reaction to the goal going in. It was one of those that I watched over and over again. And it kind of makes, like, I've got it right here in front of me. I was just watching it before we started recording. And here's Lacazette and the ball, and it goes in, and he's... He looks around to see who he can blame, and then he just sort of slams his fist into the turf. It's brilliant. Man. I like it.
But yeah, listen, let's see with Lacazette. Yeah. You know, let's see. I'd love him to get a goal that was in his name. I do think it would do him the world of good. He needs it, and we need it from him. So let's see.
All right. Well, look, we will leave it there. We're not playing until Sunday, so it's going to be another one of those long weeks without much Arsenal news, which is the case when things are going pretty well with the team. Things tend to be a bit quieter than normal, but let's hope they've got a good week ahead of them on the training ground. They'll be ready for Watford on Sunday. Another 3 points there would be nice. We'll talk about it more during the week and maybe towards the end of the week as well. James, as ever, thank you very much. Thank you guys for being here. Once more, just thanks a million for all the messages regarding the Arseblog 20. I can't say how much I appreciate everything. So thank you to you guys, and we will catch you on the next one.
Oh, wait, hang on one moment. Sorry, I just caught Kepa's penalty. It just dropped in through the window.
Better that than the fucking lawnmower guy, anyway.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
You changed it. You changed. That's the... You added variety there.
Okay, I'll do the proper one.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Perfect.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.